Hello and a big warm welcome to yet another episode on the Mission Shunya podcast. First, a big thank you for just returning to the Mission Shunya podcast. Tuning into a sustainability-themed podcast and a channel that is focused on the zero-carbon economy transition is not the easiest and the choicest thing to do for the vast majority of us. But the very fact that you are here shows your immense support to the cause. Trust me, looking back at this period, you will really feel happy that you were part of this transition and one of the earliest supporters to this global cause. I mean, this is what will probably make you happy and proud when you share some stories from the past to your future generations. Apart from having a positive impact on you, the listener, the podcast also has had a positive impact on the guest who come on the show. This again is because of you. One such guest who was on the episode earlier, Jacob Cherian, has been a very good supporter of the show. In fact, Varun Ravindra, our guest on the previous episode about Vanantara, was an introduction from Jacob. Jacob has been a great environmental evangelist over the years. You should definitely listen to episode number 33 to listen to his story. Recently, he got a community engaged to create awareness about local issues and particularly on the environment front. The guest who joins me on today's conversation has worked in journalism for a long time but found a true calling through this project which we are going to talk about today. So, who is the guest and what is she spearheading?
Hi, I'm Rajni George. I founded and I edit the Kodi Chronicle. It's a community-run eco-publication based in Kodaikanal in the Palani Hills of Tamil Nadu. We are located in the Western Ghats, which is one of the four biodiversity hotspots of India. Our goal is threefold with our crowdfunding campaign. We want to celebrate the diversity of this landscape. We want to explore the challenges that are unique to mountain ecosystems. And we want to inspire a sense of community that encompasses humans as well as the flora and fauna around us.
So Rajni, today we are going to talk about a story about the Kodai Chronicle. But before we get to that, I know this is like the second wind career for you, coming back from your previous jobs and settling down in Kodai and starting this. So what's your story been like before you returned back to Kodai and started Kodai Chronicle?
Yes, just to give you a little background, I always wanted to be a writer. I always wanted to work in a field that was related to books in a field that was related to development. So I think these two things were always in my mind. I remember we had a marriage project. It's a project at our school here at the Kodi International School where you had to plan your career. So I was always struggling with the reality of it because we had a budget and I thought I'm working in publishing, I'm working in development, and the salaries never matched up because you had to plan for raising a child. It was a very practical project. So I think when I grew up, not that I'm doing anything very adult, but I think, and this is the great thing about being in Kodi as well. I mean, it's a place full of people who I think are doing what they want and in the way that they want. But what I grew up to realize was that both these careers, I mean, if anyone who's worked in publishing and journalism, you know that it's not always financially rewarding. It can take a long time to get to that point. Or if you are in that place, there are trade-offs or you're working in something very commercial. So I've tried lots of different things. I've been in indie publishing. I've started out actually at Random House. Before that, I worked at an independent publishing house in New York, and I was hired to help set up the team at Random House in India. They were setting up an office in India. So when I was around 25, I got hired for my first big job. I returned to Delhi, where I'd gone to college. I went to Stevens.
Okay.
And I came back. That was my first real experience. And it's funny because I was writing to my old boss, who also went to school here. And I was telling her, I realize how much hard work goes into setting something up. So that was my first experience, yes, of startup life. Because even though we were part of a big publishing house with, you know, offices all over the world, it was very hands-on. We had just two editors and we had a very small staff. Of course, it grew later. And with the merger, it became Penguin Random House. And I returned to the company later. In between, I was part of the team that was setting up Caravan Magazine.
Correct.
And I worked with Open Magazine. I also set up it was a Pan-Asian photography magazine with two friends, and they were really the ones who set that up. I was working in editorial, but I think they helped me a lot to explore the visual sides of things. So these are the different sides of my career. And all along, I was consulting for the UN. Every time I wasn't in a full-time job, I used to do editorial work for them. And so that was my other career path, my other dream, just to work in development and be a part of maybe more tangible solutions. So right now, what I'm doing, in fact, after all this work in publishing and journalism and development, is I work with a not-for-profit, and it's based in Bangkok, actually. And they work with climate change adaptation. I work with communications in editorial on that team, and they deal with all parts of South Asia, some parts of Asia Pacific, all our neighboring countries. And it's an interesting point in my career where I think both my worlds are sort of meeting, because I can use my editorial skills and do something in the world of development, and hopefully something that's quite useful, because this is the world that we're living in where climate change is just the biggest, you know, issue that's facing all of us.
Wow, that's really wonderful. I mean, listening to this part really shows the passion that you have in journalism and also climate change and having a better channel to communicate things. And that perfectly leads me to the story of how Kodai Chronicle got started. I see that you have been juggling a lot between your full-time work and also your passion projects all along your career. So Kodai Chronicle, I don't think, should have been a hard start for you. So how did you get started with this? And I know Jacob Cherian, who was on a podcast earlier, has also been an active member of Kodai Chronicle. So how did you get other members aligned to Kodai Chronicle and get started with it?
Yeah, so when I first started it, I really overlooked how much work goes into starting something on your own, in the sense that it just was organic. I just thought, you know, we were in the middle of the second wave. A lot of us felt very helpless out here trying to help people in the cities. We were volunteering, checking on resources. We had no way of what was going on in our own town, because as you know, small towns have very little resources in terms of journalism. Very often it's word of mouth, it's WhatsApp groups, things are unverified, rumors are flying around. So that was when I thought, you know, and right before that, Mint Lounge had asked me to write a piece about returning to my hometown. I worked with them for a while as well, earlier in my career. And they had said, why don't you, there's a series we're running about young professionals who've gone back to their hometown. And, you know, every time I was looking for a fact check, there was just nothing, you know, there was nowhere to find out what had really happened. And obviously, I'm lucky that I've grown up in Kodaikna, so there are lots of people I could check with, but people's memories were also failing, or people had moved away. And that's when I thought, you know, this is such a special town. And I know, I mean, I used to feel very helpless about what's happening in terms of the overdevelopment of it. And, you know, what's happening to all hill stations is happening right here in my hometown. So I think there was this moment where everything came together and all of us were talking to each other a lot more because of the pandemic, just, you know, checking to see if everyone is all right, finding out what the rules were. Because Kodi was in a very unique position, different from all of you in the cities, in the sense that they decided to disallow people from coming in twice during lockdowns. Yeah, which was, you know, it was kind of amazing. Of course, it was very disruptive for, I mean, local businessmen, hoteliers. It was a very tough time for them. So, and that is the classic, I mean, conflict between, you know, all of us who want paradise to ourselves and those who want to make a living and live here. And yeah, so it all came to a head and all of us were talking. And some of us were former journalists, some of us were people who live part-time in Kodi, who have homes here, some of us were retired people. What was amazing about this group is that we spanned, you know, from teenagers to people who were in their 80s and 90s. So it was really a time for everyone to come together, I think, out of that, you know, immediate sense of, look, this is a really, I mean, this is a scary time and we all have to stick together. And what are we going to do in this small town? Because, I mean, even though we were relatively safe and there weren't many COVID cases, if this had spread, I mean, our medical resources are very limited here. I mean, you know, we did not have basic equipment to deal with serious cases of COVID. We had very basic equipment. You'd have to go down to Madurai or Coimbatore, which are the two nearest towns. But those hospitals were all full, you know, at that time. I don't know, you must remember, in, you know, at that time.
Yeah. The second wave.
Yes. So I think it was all of that. And there was a sort of, yeah, a bit of a pressure cooker effect, in the sense we were like, you know, we've got to do something. At least that's how it felt to me. I just felt like, you know, there has to be some active way to deal with, not that we did anything that immediately addressed those issues. We did make that COVID information available. we did get all that online, even that much was feet. And at the same time, then things changed. And, you know, I think things got better COVID-wise. And what happened was then we realized that, look, the most important thing that we have to talk about long-term is the environment.
Correct.
And everybody aligned on that. So people like Jacob, who was already working in this world, you know, with Terry Generation, the work that he does is very much about environmental impact. Neha Sumitran, who helped she helped me shape this magazine and, you know, the various sections that make it up. She had had a lot of experience as a digital editor of a publication, and she, you know, is someone who's worked in Kodi, being a regenerative farmer. I got her, you know, back on the publication side, and we really had a lot of fun together. She's maybe the only person I actually knew very well before.
Okay.
Aside from my mother, who started the trust with a couple of other people. So the trust, the Kodi Chronicle Trust, administers us.
Okay.
And then there were lots of other people who were aunts and relatives and family friends. But yeah, a lot of people who were new to me. There was Karuna Jenkins, who's our community editor, whose family has been here for a long time, and she's also grown up in Kodi like me. So it was a nice mix, you know, of people who had been here for a long time, people who had just gotten here and wanted to be, you know, an active part of the community. So that's the long answer again to your question. I think it's just was an alignment of priorities and, you know, coming to terms with the pandemic, all of that.
That's right. For all the listeners from around the world, just to again remind you that Kodai or Kodaikanal is a small town, a small hill station and a popular tourist attraction. And that's where Rajni is based currently. And that's where the Kodai Chronicle is based. And that's and all this story that she mentions about Kodai and Kodaikanal is all about that place. And that perfectly leads me to the next question. Like, tourism is a big thing in Kodaikanal. And I mean, as the negative externality of that is that a big biodiversity hotspot like that is kind of having a negative impact. And especially in a place like that, having the right communication channel to kind of creating awareness among the local population and also ensuring that tourists behave responsibly is a big thing. And that is one of the themes that you want to bring through the Kodai Chronicle. So what's your view on that?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I haven't introduced Kodi. Like a typical Kodiite, I've assumed that everyone knows everything about us. No, I'm joking. Not everybody assumes that, but I guess it's in a way, wherever I've lived in the world, it's always been like a center of the world for me. And weirdly enough, I've met people from Kodi all over the world. You know, sometimes when I was in the middle of some crisis, I would see somebody I knew. And I mean, because in part because of the school which was set up here, in part because of the fact that Kodi is a place where a lot of people live from around the world, it's had that kind of influence, I think, on a lot of people, you know, who used to live here. So basically, yeah, it's just a really special hill station. Like all hill stations, it has, you know, these usual issues of waste management, of, you know, overcrowding in terms of tourism. We're 2,000 meters above sea level, and it's not as high as, you know, Himalayan hill stations, but there's, and it's a very unique place. I think Ooty maybe is similar in many ways. And we're a sky island. And, you know, this is really a unique and special thing about us, because being a sky island, I mean, you know, there's a whole, in fact, Aisa Tirupati was working out here during the pandemic. And, you know, they have an Instagram handle that all of you guys should check out. It's called Shola Sky Island.
Okay.
I love it because it's this beautiful pictures, but it celebrates just that reality of being, you know, this kind of unique bioregion. So it's essentially unrepeatable. It's irreplaceable. It's, you know, just, and I don't think I realized how special it was growing up. What I did always know was that tourism was there. And of course, I knew that in a strict sense, I mean, we're all tourists. We all shouldn't be here except the original settlers, I guess, of the land. I mean, you know, we have one reporter who writes for us, who is an Adivasi, who lives near Kodi, and she reports in Tamil. We get it translated. And I guess she's one of the few people, you know, who can say that she's from here in that sense. I mean, but yeah, you know, we are living in a time where I guess a lot of us came later. We came in the 80s. My grandfather had been here first before then. And I guess, I mean, the way I like to think of it is we're here now and we have to do our best to make sure that things don't get out of control. I mean, it's definitely would have been a different place if no one had settled Kodi, but we're here for better or worse. And I think just the subculture that we've created and the unique kind of person who's here, it is possible to make this town work and you know, balance it out in terms of tourism. There are lots of suggestions. I mean, people were saying it should be a walking down, for example, the center of it. People are saying, you know, get the e-pass system going. During the pandemic, during the lockdowns, you know, there were these times when you had to get an e-pass to get up. And I have to say it worked very well. It might not be ideal for everybody. And of course, any approach where you are trying to be gatekeepers, I suppose there is always the danger of being elitist. So these are all things we have to think about.
Well, it's really good to know that you're getting the local population, as you said, the true Kode people. It's a sense of very inclusion in a way. So that's a big positive in your objectives.
We're trying. It's slow and steady. Yeah.
That leads me to the next part. Publication is one thing, but getting on-ground action is something that you would definitely look forward to. So how do you see this translation happening, creating an awareness from publication to getting on-ground action? Like, for example, you did mention about waste is a problem and pollution will be a problem if more people come and go. So how do you think this is going to have a translation from publication to on-ground action?
Yeah, I mean, and I haven't even completely answered your previous question in the sense that reaching out to locals, whether tourists or residents, it's one definitely one aim of the publication, because you know, if we don't create awareness amongst people who are living here, I mean, we're doing many different things with this publication. We're straddling several different worlds, because you know, you're in one hand, you're trying to inform locals, you're trying to impart local news, things of local significance. At the same time, you're trying to reach out to a wider audience to sustain it. I mean, both financially and in terms of readership, and to, you know, to get more people to read what's in here, because it's a small town. I mean, our average population, it's around 40,000-50,000. It swells to much more during tourist season. But I think the value of getting, I mean, in terms of on-ground action, this is why the trust is also very important. And of course, like all publications, We're limited by many factors, you know, how much time people are spending on reading, all of that. But a print edition has made a difference. We did a first one last year. Otherwise, we were always online, because we had just hadn't planned anything. We hadn't raised the resources yet. This campaign that we're running right now to get people to sign or to donate to, you know, fund our operations. This is the first time we're actively getting out there. We're actively trying to get these funds, because to translate to on-ground action, I think it's a much bigger thing in terms of reach, in terms of creating these networks. We have this group that meets, because there are already many platforms in Kode, in the sense that, not platforms, but organizations. We had the Palni Hills Conservation Council. We have citizenship action, you know, groups. We have many different networks. We have Rotary. We have, you know, all these other organizations. But I think with the Chronicle, what we're doing is getting everybody together so that we can act together. So the idea of fostering a dialogue to then act, you know, consciously, I mean, that's really important to us. One of the things that we did was we had a series of articles, you know, about waste management in different hill stations in India, which Jacob spearheaded, and he reported most of it. There was a reporter called Joel Kumar, who is working in Kode specifically and in Gangtok. So we looked at all these different, I mean, how this problem, it's a problem in every hill station, because you have all this waste that's accumulating because of this tourist population, which is also, you know, keeping a lot of people in a livelihood. And then they leave, and it's very hard to get that waste off that mountain in an effective way.
Correct.
Yeah, as you know. So what one thing we did was, off these articles and just off, you know, collective energy around the Chronicle, it was something new, because, you know, everyone who keeps telling me, every time I used to come back earlier, I used to be living, you know, all over India, all over other parts of the world, and I would keep coming back, and they would say, I would always feel like I couldn't take part, you know, because I thought, okay, I'm just here for 1 month. So this is the first time, actually, thanks to the pandemic, that I'm here this long. And I think a lot of us younger people, you know, I mean, we feel like this is a time where we now can do something, because otherwise, we very much relied on our parents to, you know, form these civic groups and, you know, take action. I think it's time for people, even if they're living part-time in Kode, you know, to be a part of this. I mean, there are people who really want to help. There's one individual in particular who reached out to us, and he's asked to be unnamed, but he, you know, he came to Kode when he was young, and like a lot of people, just had and, you know, a life-changing experience here. And I think he reached out, and they said, you know, look, I'm going to match, you know, whatever people are donating, I'm going to double that up to a certain extent.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So this is very exciting news for us. It's a substantial donation to our trust. So we're reaching out to people to now, you know, if you're on the fence, if you're thinking about something you want to help crowdfund, this is a good time to step in because, you know, if you think, oh, it's just this amount, the sky is going to double it. Yes.
That's wonderful. Now, what are the plans for the publication and other offline activities on the ground? So what are the plans in, say, the next year or so?
So there are lots of plans. And I think we've been limited until now when you were asking about the on-ground action, primarily because of the pandemic, because a lot of the people actually who are very active in CODI, I mean, people are amazing here. I mean, older people just don't seem to age, in my opinion. They're just, you know, very active. They have people in their 80s going on hikes every weekend. So they are super active, but we wanted to be careful about meeting in groups. We have done that a couple of times. And there are cleanup drives that are going on all the time it's happening on their own. But what we're doing is bringing everyone together. There's a series of programs that are being organized with the KIS's Center for Environment and Humanity. And what they're doing is working with sanitation workers and with the municipality to say, look, we care about what's happening with them. We're getting them gear. Now that we're raising some funds, we can also contribute to that. The Chronicle can contribute to the trust so that we can give money for that. So it's taken some time because the first 9 months, I was just trying to make sure that this publication even survived. I mean, it's very hard. I mean, I think, exactly. You know, it's much harder than anything I've done before because I've always had institutional backing. You know, when you're working in a big corporate, you have that. Even as a freelancer, you know, people are getting their money from a certain place and you're getting paid. But then this is the first time I had to actually plan for, you know, retainers for everybody. And they were very small, but only now, you know, is when they're actually professionalizing it and saying they're going to, you know, try and pay you up to industry standards in the long run. I mean, right now we're making a start with small amounts. But all these things are helping us to get to the next level. In terms of future plans, yes, we want to do, you know, we want to, for example, with the waste management activities, we want to keep extending that dialogue so that we work together with the Center for Environment and Humanity on the segregation facility, for example, to create awareness, to get the wider community to start using it. Because most people, when they segregate, they just think it ends. I mean, it has been ending up at the same place, unfortunately. You know, there are a lot of people who make an effort.
True.
And that's a big deal. So these things take a long time. And I don't want to be overly, you know, I don't want to say that we're going to do this much. And, you know, I think it might take years. We don't even have the resources. We haven't had till now for feasibility studies that originate in CODI. You know, so when somebody asked me how to clean up the lake, I had to tell them that, look, we have lots of people who are telling us we can do this and that from outside. But we need to actually even start with new data. And that's, you know, originating from CODI. Of our own accord, because I mean, you must know about several different issues that have affected CODI in the past, whether it's HUL or, you know, there are lots of different times at which people, I mean, did these feasibility studies. But I think it's important to now, you know, take a fresh approach and say, look, this is the current data. This is how much how much pollution has you know, affected this part of the town, and then act on that. So there's lots. I mean, so when you ask me, I mean, yeah, it's always an overwhelming question because I find it hard to, I mean, it's hard to predict it because we've just managed to get, you know, to get together this much funding. We're just getting there. We're not there yet, in terms of getting it going. So it's just, yeah, we're not even 1 year old. We're 1 year old in May. And I think that's when we're going to know. We're all meeting, and one of our trustees is Avijit Michael, who is the executive director of JATCA. He's somebody we're planning with, you know, just in terms of 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year projections. I mean, these are all things that now we can finally plan for. So I think it's very important for any publication, if anyone else out there is, I know there are lots of people who are doing amazing things in the environmental space, but I mean, I can't stress enough how important it is to get the financing going. I wish I could have done it the other way around and had it first, but I think proof of concept was really important in this case.
Well, that's really wonderful to know that a lot of people are forthcoming. Like, for example, someone saying like, I will double the amount that you get in crowdfunding, and a lot of people saying like, let's get on ground and act on it. I'll handle this. So that's really positive for a community program like this that intends to get away from the publication and also do some on-ground action. So that's very, very good. So Rajni, on the final note, let's look into the crowdfunding part of it. Can you share more details of until when is this campaign running and how can people contribute? And also, I'm sure a lot of listeners probably would listen to this a little later after the crowdfunding campaign has ended. So how would you encourage them to get in touch with you? And I'm sure maybe some of them will say, like, I have an idea, you could do this, or I can be a guest contributor to your publication, or I can do an on-ground activity or an online activity for you. So how can they get engaged with Codec Chronicle?
Yeah, we've been very lucky. You're right. I mean, to find these people who've volunteered time, energy, you know, whether it's articles, whether it's artwork, you know, our logo was donated by a local artist, Sumita Sundaram, who lives in Kodi. And it's a beautiful painting of a part of Kodi near the lake. If any of you have been here, just near, opposite the boathouse and the boat club. But, so yeah, there've been people who've volunteered in all kinds of ways. There are people who didn't know anything about journalism, but just, you know, helped us with outreach. There are people who were, you know, just finding out about it, the younger generation who they're younger than me. I'm 40. And, you know, they're just starting to, like, they're in their 20s and also getting interested and thinking, you know, is there something that I could do in Kodi? So we've been lucky. And I think what the campaign is doing is saying, look, you could also help support us. So this is basically what this is environmental journalism out of one of India's four biodiversity hotspots. I mean, a valuable thing. And the reason it's so difficult is that there aren't always people who are here. At the same time, there are people in the cities who either go to the mountains. And that's why, you know, our campaign is the Pulse of Kodi campaign, but our slogan is also very connected to this wider audience, which is give back to the mountains. We all go to the mountains, you know, when we need to regenerate, when we need spiritual sustenance. So the idea is that now, you know, you could pledge anywhere from 1,000 rupees, which covers your annual print subscription and also helps support print costs for 10 copies, to 5,000 for, you know, two subscriptions and helping to print helping with print costs for 10 copies and the budget for one story. So it goes up, and then you have, and we've named each pledge after a kind of animal that you find in Kodi. So, you know, it's a big shola full of, you have shield tails, shola kili birds, you've got Shola Kilis, and we added birds for people, the word bird for people who don't speak Tamil. So we've tried to make this accessible to everybody. We have the Travancore flying squirrel for 10,000. We've got quite a few of those, actually. I think 10,000 has been like an average pledge for young working people. Lots of, subscriptions, just people who, you know, wanted to give even 50,000 we've got a few of those, and those are wild boars. You know, people who are in, covering print costs for 100 copies. We had a 1 lakh subscription, which was the Nilgiri tar is what we are calling that tier. And yeah, we've even got one where it says you'll fund the whole campaign, which is the Indian elephant. So yeah, we went according to size. And after the campaign is over, which is the end of the month, absolutely, you could still be in touch with us. I would like to share my email address, and we have a submission page that I'd like to share as well on the link to this podcast, because we're welcoming submissions. We do pay for submissions, and we do pay for everything we publish. We are hoping to increase the amount as we expand. But all of these things are ways to engage with us. We're going to keep our subscription plan going after the campaign, if that was what you were asking as well.
Wow, that's really interesting about having different animals and correlating different levels of subscriptions and pledges. So that's really wonderful.
This is Jacob's idea. When we were talking about the team earlier, so he was the person who planned this campaign and originated it. I'm new to digital technologies. I think I've worked in print media primarily, in the sense that I was working with that idea in mind. And then I was there when the switch was being made to digital. But this is new for me. I worked with books. I worked, you know, in development. So just, yeah, having a website and a magazine, it's been quite really interesting, all the different possibilities, you know, for ways in which you can mix up the content. Jacob introduced us to the campaign as a medium even for this. I mean, I think we always had it in mind. We didn't know if we could pull it off because we were such a small team. So we're lucky to have so many supporters. I mean, all of you out there, you know, people who have been helping us, there are people who are posting all the time, everything we you know, have on social media. There are people who are sending us songs that they created in Kodaikanal.
Wow.
You know, but there's a girl who lives in Canada now and she had created music here. So we've really been amazed by the amount of support we've got.
That's really wonderful to know. So I'll definitely put the links to the campaign and also the website so that people can get in touch with you. And I'm sure if people just want to contribute articles and write some stories about Kode, I think people will definitely get in touch. And I'm sure as a journalist yourself, so you will probably pick the best ones and get them on the final publication. So Rajni, it's been like very interesting to have this chat with you, conversation with you. And as a visitor who has been to Kode for at least, I think, just once, I think I learned a lot about Kode and the importance of it being a biodiversity hotspot. And I must tell that in addition to the campaign, I also think kind of covered a story about community engagement. I'm sure a lot of listeners will take away that as well, of how to get people involved in community projects like this for a cause like environmental awareness and having people on ground. So that's a real valuable takeaway from this conversation. So thank you very much for taking time to join me on this podcast today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Girish. And good luck with the podcast. I think it's amazing to have podcasts like this out there because, you know, this is the kind of story that people want to listen to. And like you said, community action is very much a part of that story. That's, you know, these are big stories from smaller towns that are really important. Thank you.
Well, the action item at the end of this episode is to check the link in the show notes section or visit the website of Kode Chronicle and join the crowdfunding campaign. It is something worthy to be a part of. But if you are late to the campaign, which could happen if you are a listener who prefers listening to Mission Shunya at leisure, which is also cool by the way, you can think of getting on to a community engagement program like how Kode Chronicle team have got together in a short span. I am sure Rajni and Jacob and others in the team would be definitely happy to help you get started with this. So again, I am really happy and excited that the podcast channel is getting some network effect, a positive one. So I am really grateful for that. I would also encourage you to drop a rating review on podcast platforms that you listen to this on so that the channel reaches a wider audience. Thanks in advance for that. And finally, I'm sure you would have noticed a new design language in the podcast art. And that is thanks to our design partner TerraGeneration.com, a content and marketing agency specialized in telling the stories of people and organizations working in climate tech, biodiversity conservation, and sustainability. With that, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off. And as always, thank you for listening.